The granite walls of Kyrgyzstan's Karavshin region rise like a dream from alpine meadows, a climber's paradise often called the Yosemite of Central Asia. In summer 2000, four American climbers, Tommy Caldwell, Beth Rodden, Jason Singer-Smith, and John Dickey, traveled to this remote wonderland seeking adventure. Instead, they found themselves thrust into a nightmare that would transform them from adventurers to hostages. What began as a climbing expedition became a harrowing tale of survival against Islamic militants who would later be named alongside Al-Qaeda as targets in the War on Terror. Imagine waking up to gunfire while suspended in a portaledge 1,000 feet above the ground, your paradise suddenly transformed into a prison. How would you react when faced with the unthinkable? This is precisely what these four ordinary climbers confronted, a situation that would test not just their physical endurance, but their moral boundaries and force decisions that would haunt them long after returning home. The Soviet Union's collapse in 1992 revealed Kyrgyzstan's spectacular granite walls to Western climbers, with the Karavshin region quickly becoming a premier destination. For the four Americans, the attraction was irresistible. Tommy and Beth were climbing celebrities, a wholesome couple on magazine covers. Tommy had climbed since age 3 under his father's guidance, while Beth became his partner after meeting on El Capitan. Smith and Dickey embodied climbing's bohemian tradition. Smith left home at 18 for Yosemite's Camp 4, working minimum-wage jobs between adventures. Dickey found in climbing a freedom his strict religious upbringing never offered. They overlooked explicit State Department warnings about southern Kyrgyzstan becoming a hotbed of Islamic militancy, where poverty created perfect conditions for extremist groups like the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan. A warning had cautioned that militants could again launch an armed incursion and seize foreign hostages. The climbers either missed this warning or dismissed it, a common psychological blind spot. When excited about something, we filter out negative information, focusing only on what supports our desired outcome. Jumabay Khojaev, or Juma Namangani, led the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan. His transformation from Soviet paratrooper to Islamic militant exemplifies how political repression breeds extremism in post-Soviet Central Asia. Namangani's radicalization began during his Afghanistan military service, where he witnessed Mujahideen tactics firsthand. After the Soviet collapse, he returned to Uzbekistan, where President Karimov's harsh suppression of Islamic practices drove many devout Muslims toward extremism. By the late 1990s, Namangani had become a formidable military commander, combining Soviet training with guerrilla warfare. With political leader Tahir Yuldashev, he established the IMU to create an Islamic state, funded by bin Laden's network and increasingly by the opium trade. Their first major operation in 1999, kidnapping Japanese geologists for ransom, embarrassed the Kyrgyz military, who lost 27 soldiers while spending $3.3 million in the conflict. By summer 2000, Namangani was planning a larger incursion. Namangani's story reflects a global pattern: military veterans using their training against former allies, drug money financing terrorism, and religious extremism justifying violence in failed states. The Americans' ordeal began with dawn gunfire. Forced from their position, they found their camp ransacked and met their captors, Abdul, Obeid, and Sue, along with Sergeant Osmanov, a Kyrgyz soldier kept only as a guide. For 6 days, they were marched through treacherous terrain as human shields. The horror deepened when they discovered Osmanov murdered by the rebels. Smith forced himself to stare at the corpse until numb, a psychological defense against trauma. As military operations intensified, the hostages endured terrifying close calls with exploding rounds and bullets. Dickey and Rodden spent 17 hours in a tiny mud-floored cave, wet and shivering. Thirst became their greatest torment. When Smith nearly collapsed, Rodden revived him with their last candy bar. Throughout this, the rebels maintained strict Islamic practices. Smith obsessed over killing their captors. If they take us to wherever the fuckistan, we could be there for months, he admitted. I have lost all compassion for these men. Their experience shows how quickly civilized people adapt to extreme circumstances, both for survival and for contemplating previously unthinkable actions. By their sixth night of captivity, the Americans face their moment of truth. Despite contemplating pushing Sue from a cliff, Smith and Dickey hesitated, unable to commit violence despite their earlier bravado. As midnight approached with storm clouds threatening, Caldwell realized his companions wouldn't act. Fearing deadly hypothermia if caught in the storm, he asked Rodden if she wanted him to take action. When she didn't respond, he pushed Sue off the cliff. The Americans watched as Sue tumbled into darkness, not knowing he had landed on a ledge just 30 feet below, not the 1,500 feet they perceived. Disoriented, they fled through darkness, eventually reaching a shrine where Kyrgyz soldiers surrounded them at gunpoint. When a soldier discovered Rodden was female during the frisk, everything changed. Believing death was imminent, Rodden whispered, "Singer, we almost made it," to which he responded, "We did make it, Beth." This moment captures human resilience. Even in our darkest hour, we find clarity and courage. Caldwell's decision represents the impossible moral choices hostages face, where survival and ethics collide. The climbers' return sparked a media storm. Jason Smith's mother sent an emotional email to friends that went viral, spreading minor inaccuracies. CNN aired footage of the climbers in uniform, while reporters camped outside their families' homes. Each processed trauma differently back home. Dickey turned to alcohol, Smith retreated to solo climbs in Yosemite, and Rodden battled nightmares and anxiety, finding therapy inadequate for her trauma. Then came the bombshell. Sue was alive in a Bishkek jail. His real name was Rafshan Sharipov, a 20-year-old Tajik recruited by the IMU with promises of $500 monthly. After his fall, he had wandered for 7 days before capture. This revelation transformed their harrowing tale into a controversial one. Critics questioned inconsistencies, exaggerated distances, and cliff heights. By spring 2001, some even called the kidnapping a hoax created for book and movie deals. Our desire for clean narratives often clashes with trauma's messy reality. Memory falters under extreme stress, yet we expect perfect consistency from survivors, while media sensationalism oversimplifies complex human experiences. After their ordeal, each climber recovered differently. Tommy Caldwell, least injured and supported by family, immediately returned to climbing, establishing some of the world's hardest free climbs and becoming a legend in the sport. Beth Rodden initially battled nightmares and depression before rediscovering her passion under Caldwell's coaching, eventually making the first ascent of Yosemite's hardest traditional climb. John Dickey struggled with accusations linking the climbers to Kyrgyz soldiers' deaths until finding potential closure by returning to the now peaceful Karavshin Mountains in 2011. Jason Smith continued climbing nomadically but struggled with the group's separation, feeling they'd reached some zenith of the human spirit only to have it dissolve. The controversy ended when Kyrgyz journalist Irena Balakina interviewed Sharipov for NBC's Dateline, where he confirmed the American's account of his fall. What's profound isn't just the dramatic escape, but how differently each person processed the same trauma, each finding their own unique path to healing.